9:36 time. Welcome back in. No Co now on a Tuesday morning. I am Tanner Schwint. Thanks for being with us. Well, who's the best basketball team in the state? The college basketball team in the state. That's what we want to know today. That's our poll question. Let us know on the Tatanka Grill text line, 888-530-0043, 888-530-0043. Get a quick look at the poll, and so far, it is a three-way tie, exactly split. So let us know on our Facebook page, on our Twitter page, at Tanner Schwint. Joining us now up on the hotline, it is Kevin Lytle with the Coloradoan. Kevin, you can make a very strong case that the Colorado State Rams are the best college basketball team in the state.
Yeah, I think you definitely can. It's kind of fun. We're going to, or potentially we'll know a pretty good answer to that question in about a week and a half. You know, there's a chance CU and CSU could play, and then CSU and UNC play in about a week and a half. So we're going to find out. But, yeah, CSU, I think certainly probably had the most hype, if you will, coming into the season of the three. And they've done nothing to deter that hype right now, you know, two kind of lower level opponents, but one pretty good one, Oral Roberts, and they blew them away. So, I mean, pretty much a perfect start for CSU. The only hiccup was, you know, a little injury to Kendall Moore, but it looks like he's fine. We'll be back. So, if you're a CSU fan, you have to be pretty excited right now.
Yeah, the depth of this team just continues to amaze me.
Yeah, they, you know, I wrote about they're going basically 10 deep, and that's sort of an asterisk 10 because that doesn't really include Kendall Moore. Baylor Hebb has kind of taken his spot, and Baylor Hebb will probably get bumped out of the rotation, but they have so many guys, and it's incredible. We talked about a week ago that John Tonje was probably going to go from starting and scoring 31 points in the opener to coming off the bench, and that's exactly what's happened. He's come off the bench the last two games, and that just shows the versatility of what they can do. You know, they start him just as more a matchup. They wanted to go small ball against Oral Roberts, and then they've gone back to having a traditional center since then. They can do so many things. I mean, freshman Jalen Lake looks really good. Sophomore Isaiah Rivera, I kind of thought he would take a big step forward, and it looks like he's doing that. They can do a lot. It's going to get tricky. You know, there is, you know, the bad side, in quotes, about having that much depth is, at some point, the rotation's going to start trimming down, and you're going to have fewer minutes and fewer shots for some guys, and how will they handle it? But I think this team will handle it well, but, man, they have a lot of guys.
Yeah, they do, and two of those guys, Dave Verratti and Isaiah Stevens, they look just perfectly in sync early in the season.
Yeah, exactly. It was funny, in that Oral Roberts game, they were both fairly quiet. You know, Roddy missed a little bit of time with some back spasms. Stevens kind of just facilitated, didn't have to score much, but they've both been really dynamic since then. Roddy against Arkansas Pine Bluff scored a career high, I think it's 28 points, and I don't know if you can say 28 felt easy and quiet, but it kind of did. That's just how efficient he is right now and can be. Those two guys, I mean, they're going to battle each other for Mountain West Player of the Year. I think it'll be between them and Grant Sherfield and probably Matt Bradley at San Diego State. But those guys just look, they've already been really good in their careers, but they both look like they're ready for a whole nother step up this season.
They do, and it's exciting to watch. I think when you talk about, you know, who's the best basketball team in the state, you talked about how we may know the answer to that. I think the ceiling might be highest for the Colorado State Rams because they have that camaraderie. They've got that team already that has played together a lot of games.
Yeah, exactly. I think in some ways this CSU team a couple years ago or a year ago might be where CU is right now. It's a lot of, you know, young, exciting guys, but haven't kind of gone through the ringer together. Obviously, they're replacing a phenomenal player, McKinley Wright. So, yeah, I think CSU, just the cohesion and the amount of games they've played together kind of gives them that edge, you know, on paper right now. Like I say, hopefully we'll get to see it proven out on the court if those teams play each other. But right now, it all looks good for the Rams.
Well, and Kevin, I know you were messing around on Twitter saying that 88-62 win over Peru, it really took a hit on the Rams averaging 100 points a game this year.
Yeah, they were right at 100 after two games. Now they're all the way down to 96 points per game, which, you know, I'm not sure if you can win main games with only that few points. But no, and obviously they're not going to average 100 this year, but I also, in some ways, don't feel like they've, they're playing well, certainly, but I don't think they've hit full stride or anything yet either. Obviously, competition level plays into it. They're going to play much tougher teams than the last two, but yeah, and this team can do a lot of things well, and that's where that versatility comes in is, Adam Thistlewood, for instance, he's one of their great shooters, didn't really do anything against Oral Roberts and didn't matter because they have other guys. So that's where that depth really comes into play. It probably helps you avoid a game like, remember the St. Mary's game last year where CSU barely scored at all. Obviously, there were some extenuating circumstances with COVID and everything, but with this depth, you probably should be able to avoid really low-scoring games.
When you point at this team and say, okay, that's a staple win right there, and I think Oral Roberts maybe a little bit, but when is the one that you've got marked on your calendar?
Well, the earliest potential one is a week from yesterday. If CSU makes the Paradise Jam championship and, maybe probably would see CU there. If they play in that title game and CSU wins that, I think that would be your first, that's a pretty big win. I think that's your first opportunity. And then beyond that, in non-conference play, Mississippi State and Alabama are your really two big ones to circle that. If they can get one of those, you're feeling really, really good.
Yeah, talking with Kevin Lytle out of the Colorado about the CSU men's basketball team. Kevin, I kind of want to take a little bit of a side note there. I believe, was it a Saturday night game that CSU had? That fan base was still there rocking, and that just goes to show that people are going to support good programs.
Yeah, it was a good sign. Friday night, actually.
Friday night, excuse me.
Pine Bluff. And yeah, I was very curious because obviously Oral Roberts crowd was great, but that wasn't a big shock. One, it was the first men's basketball game with fans in 2 years. Oral Roberts obviously kind of has a name because of what they did last year. So you figured that would be a good crowd. And it was. It was well over 7,000, really good energy. But then it's like, okay, you're following up a Friday night. There's a lot to do on Friday night. Arkansas Pine Bluff, a non-name team. How's it going to be? Well, pulled out just shy of 5,000, which is a really good sign, and the student crowd was really good. So I think signs are pointing in a really strong direction. If CSU goes and has a strong Paradise Jam tournament, you'd hope that when they return home, that will just continue. So, yeah, good early signs for the fan base.
Yeah, it's exciting, and this is a fan base that is in desperate need of some positivity.
I see what you're doing. You're pivoting.
Oh, you don't want to talk about Air Force and CSU football?
Whatever, man. It's your show. Let's do whatever you want.
that was such a tough game for CSU. We talked a lot last week about how, we both thought Air Force was kind of going to dominate that game. And what caught me off guard is that you had a lot of fans saying, well, it was 35-21. It wasn't a blowout. Well, by Air Force standards, it really was.
Yeah, it was one of those. I mean, I will give CSU credit. When it was 14-0, in the first quarter, I thought, oh, boy, this might get really ugly. And they did fight back well, but they also never really threatened. I don't think there was ever a point where you thought CSU was about to, go tie the game or even be in position to take the lead. So I'd say it was very comfortable. I mean, Air Force put up more than 500 yards of offense. They did the Air Force thing, and then they did the thing Air Force tends to do against CSU, and that's a big pass play. That 92-yarder was absolutely a backbreaker and in some ways kind of embarrassing. It's the longest pass play in Air Force history, which isn't really surprising. Is on a 1st and 27 of all things, so everything about that was pretty bad. But yeah, they just gashed CSU's defense.
Yeah, and I mean, you got drives here of over 4 minutes, a drive over 7 minutes, a drive over 5.5 minutes. Air Force kind of, I mean, they did what they were gonna do and said that they were gonna do.
Yeah, exactly. And in the first half, Air Force, I don't know if maybe they got a little swagger from that 92-yard touchdown pass, but they kind of tried a few throws more than I would expect, and it kind of went poorly and derailed some of their stuff in the first half. And then the third quarter, you could see they basically said, like, forget this. We're going back to Air Force football. And there were three total possessions in the third quarter. Two were Air Force long touchdown drives, both 75-yard touchdown drives. TSU's one possession was a touchdown, but you only got one possession in the quarter. So that third quarter really was the end of the game and was very, very classic Air Force drive of just long, methodical touchdown drives. You know, the first one they had both a fake punt for a first down and then a fourth down, a traditional fourth down conversion. And that's just what Air Force does. You know, you feel great. You have a team in third and five. They pick up 3 yards, and in normal circumstance, you're feeling good. But against Air Force, that just means they're going to go pick up 3 yards on fourth down.
Yeah, talking again with Kevin Lytle out of the Colorado. And Kevin, we said it leading up to the game. What did CSU have to do if they had any hope? And that was when the turnover battle. You can't give Air Force extra possessions. And Todd Senteo, two more picks this week.
Yeah, those are big, especially I think that first one after Air Force had gone up a touchdown, then throw a pick, they go score again, and like I say, 14-0. You know, I thought it might get uglier after that, but really that 14-point cushion ended up being, it just made it very comfortable for Air Force the whole game. So yeah, you just can't do that against Air. You know, most teams will make you punch, but Air Force especially, just with how they bleed the clock and all that, a turnover, like one turnover in a normal game, against Air Force, it's almost like a 1.5 because of not only the possession wasted, but the time that they'll bleed off with that turnover.
Yeah, and Kevin, talk to me. Make this make sense. Trey McBride still doesn't have a touchdown.
Yeah, exactly. Didn't have a catch in the second half when you're trying to come back and win. So it's unfortunately looking like a frustrating final couple weeks of his CSU career. Obviously, we'll see what happens. You know, they'll be able to move the ball in Hawaii, so we'll see if maybe he can get back in the touchdown mix. But he had, I think, 80 yards in the first half, and that's what he ended with.
Well, and when you talk about Trey McBride, you know, he's looking for those accolades. He's looking for those, you know, draft stock at this point, and it's tough to win the best tight end of the country when you don't have any touchdowns.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, his every other number really shows that he probably should win the Mackey. But to be frank, between team record, which shouldn't factor in, but it generally does, between team record and his touchdowns, I think that's probably going to cost him the Mackey, which would be a real shame. I mean, there are a lot of great tight ends, so it's not like he, you know, 100% has to be the best one, but I think he certainly would deserve it. But I think that touchdown thing, if you're one of those voters and you're deciding between two players, that's probably going to be a deciding factor.
Kevin, I have to ask, the post-game press conferences, what do you have to do in your mind to get ready to go in there after a loss like this, dealing with Steve Adazio?
I mean, just, you know, it's just part of the job. It's going to be uncomfortable, obviously. No one's happy after a loss. So, you know, just do a job, ask the legitimate, fair questions about the team and the program, and however that's handled is how it's handled. But, yeah, it certainly was a testy atmosphere Saturday night.
Did you think Terry Fry was out of line with his question?
No, I thought he kind of was asking, I forget the exact wording, so I guess I'd have to go back and listen, but basically, big picture about, you know, direction of the program. And, you know, when you're 3-7, I think it's fair to ask about big picture of the program. So I think it was one of those. And Steve Adazio, I will say, he kind of, maybe not straight up apologized Monday, but kind of said, you know, I was just frustrated, you know, with everything, and kind of let the emotions carry away. So, yeah, I think he was frustrated earlier in the press conference as well. And certainly is feeling pressure of losses. I think that kind of led to a little bit of the extreme response there. And you know, that's some that, again, will happen, you know, as losses come. Obviously, no one's happy with that. And so I think that's where a lot of that frustration came from, I believe.
Talking with Kevin Lytle out of the Colorado in here about the CSU men's football team and, you know, now on a 4-game slide. And the thing that stood out to me too, Kevin, you can talk about Mike Bobo all you want and whether he was a good coach or not. But one of the things that Steve Adazio did say in the post-game press conference was that we're working on how to watch film. We're working on – and I feel like that's stuff that, you know, Mike Bobo probably had his guys doing instead of scheming up plays. I thought that was one of the quotes that stood out for me.
Yeah, and that's not the first time this season that Coach Adazio has, you know, he's never said Bobo's name, never would, obviously, and that would really cross the line. But he's clearly taking some shots at Bo over there. Been a few times where he's talked about, yes, things like that. Of, you know, we're building a program, not just a, you know, a team that's going to throw around some fancy plays, which obviously is a, you know, a shot at Bobo's, you know, high flying offense that didn't produce wins, which, you know, is both a shot, but also not totally wrong. And then, yeah, it was very interesting. The basically guys have never been through the strain that we're putting them in as far as practice effort and film effort and study effort. You know, that's a pretty, pretty damning thing to say about, you know, Mike Bobo. Again, you'd probably different players would have different feelings on if that's true or not. Obviously they did watch film. Obviously they did practice, in the way they thought was best, but yeah, it's been very clear, that he thinks that this team, you know, previously was not, I guess, living up to certainly a standard he would think for game preparation.
And I'll just say it, it's tough to be preaching that stuff sitting at 3-7. Hawaii coming up this weekend, long travel, everything like that. This is probably CSU's last shot at a win here. What do you think happens?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. CSU, I think, to a man, is a better team than Hawaii, but Hawaii has been playing teams really well on the island. They beat Fresno. They played San Diego State to the wire. And part of that is the very obvious. It is tough travel, and Steve Adazio has already kind of talked up and down about that. He basically called it unfair travel, which, I mean, I guess in a way I get it. It's unique, but, you know, they're in the conference, so it's, I don't see how it's unfair. Every other team does as well, and Hawaii six times a year has to go to the mainland, so I'm not sure that's unfair. It's uncomfortable, certainly. So we'll see how they handle that. They're leaving Wednesday, which I think is the earliest I've ever seen a team leave for a Saturday game. So we'll see how they handle it. Like I say, I think, you know, X's and O's, you know, to a man, CSU is a better football team. But we'll see. This is a very mental game more than anything. One, how do they handle the travel and all that? And two, how engaged are both teams in their season? So we'll see. It's I think the line last I saw was 2.5 for CSU, and that sounds about right. A very, you know, basically close to a pick'em game. So I'm struggling with this one. I think CSU will win, but I don't feel supremely confident in that pick.
Well, it sounds like Kevin's going to be staying off of his FanDuel account there. Kevin Lytle out of the Colorado. Kevin, appreciate your time. You're inside, my friend. We'll catch up with you next week.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Tanner.
Thank you. That's Kevin Lytle there. Appreciate the insight. 9:53 the time. Let's get a break. We'll be back on the other side to wrap up hour number one on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.